Appreciate the good singing. You folks do a marvelous job with your singing, and it sounds great. Once again, I'm honored to be able to speak to you and bring to you words from the Bible. As I stated this morning, I chose my sermon topics on what I believe would be sermons that I would preach if I only had one opportunity to preach to you. Hopefully, I'll have more than that. But the things that I have prepared this evening, I hope will be helpful to you. This is not a particularly long sermon, but length is overstated sometimes. On November 19th, 1863, there was a memorial service held in a small Pennsylvania town, and the keynote speaker got up and spoke for 2 hours. But we remember the two-minute speech that was spoken by the 6'6" guy with the stovepipe hat. So I'm not going to have a two-minute sermon, but it's not going to be as long as the one this morning. I hope to present the material this evening in a way that encourages you and that I don't come off as being critical. But the thing that I want to talk about this evening, I find in a general way, is something that the brethren need to think a lot more about, and maybe correct some things that we don't do as we should do. In the title of the sermon's Opportunities, as the young gentleman read from Galatians 6, that's next. You know, over the years, I've read a lot of debate books on the controversies that existed in the Brotherhood over the years, especially what we would call the institutional issues. Having lived in Wisconsin and Michigan, those issues were not settled in the 50s and 60s, like they were maybe in more southern climes. We've certainly had to deal with those ourselves. But one of the controversies that was important was this idea of the individual versus the church. What is the individual authorized to do versus what the church is authorized to do? And the view of passages like Galatians 6 and verse 10 and James 1 and verse 27, you know, visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. Their view was that, you know, it was the church's responsibility to take care of those things. And of course, they did it by, quote, the institutional method of supporting old folks' homes and orphanages and things of that nature. But those of us who took the scriptural view, which I believe is the proper view of the Bible, realized that passages like Galatians 6:10 and James 1:27 were defining individual responsibilities of Christians. I even had, when I stood for that truth, even had one liberal preacher in Wisconsin call me an orphan hater because I didn't believe in sending the church's money from the church treasury to the orphanage. And I later found out that the orphanage that they were sending money to, these children were not even orphans. So that was a little bit strange as well. So I want to examine this issue a little bit and, you know, see whether there's any basis for this condemnation that we sometimes receive. So why this epithet? Why this condemnation is it given out? Well, first of all, I would suggest that it's designed to cloud the issue and to charge the issue with emotions. And a lot of people, once they've done that, they feel that they've won the argument. But that really isn't the case. And they often follow something like that with something like this. They say, well, how else will the work get done? Well, in some respects, that's actually a very good question. How else will the work get done? Well, it's very simple. The work gets done when, by faith, every Christian firmly takes hold of their responsibility according to passages like Galatians 6 and James 1:27, and we do what needs to be done. But we can do that as individuals. We don't do that as a congregation. We don't take the money out of the church treasury. Now, you and I can't relieve every widow. I can't provide a home for every orphan. I can't help support every preacher. And I can't meet every man's need, even those who are non-Christians. But I can, as I have opportunity and ability, provide relief to some widow. I can provide a home for some orphan. I can provide some support for some preacher, and I can help some man's need. So the question becomes then, are there any opportunities? You know, I've read this passage, I don't know how many times, and when we talk about reaping what we sow, we normally think of, you know, our fleshly appetites and so forth. But when you really examine this passage, the context has to do with what Paul says in verse 6. Let him who is taught the word share in all good things with him that teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. Specifically in regards to sharing the good things with those who teach us. For he who sows to his flesh, you know, doesn't help out the teacher, will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit helps the teacher, will through the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not greet while doing good. It's a good thing to do, to share with those who taught us in the Word. For in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, mankind in general, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. Then I would reference you to a couple of other scriptures that have a bearing on this. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 9. When Paul said, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So God's people need to be a sharing people. Matthew 6 and verse 19, what did Jesus say? He said, do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth where moth and rust and where thieves break through in and steal, but lay up your treasure in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. Now, this is real important to remember. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So we need to be sharing this world's goods with those who teach us, those who have, whether they're in the church or out of the church, but we do that individually. Unfortunately, and this is where I don't want to come across as being trying to condemn everybody, but it seems to me that so many Christians, you know, they find opportunities for other things, the latest fashion, vacations or recreation, or the latest iPhone. Unfortunately, some spend time in their careers. They make plenty of money, but they're always working at this career. And there's a million other things that get in the way. And they never seem to have anything to share with a widow, an orphan, a gospel preacher that might be in need, or a person in general. And I think this is an important thing that a lot of us may be neglecting. Sir Francis Bacon, I'm a collector of quotes, and I like this quote because it's so appropriate for this topic. He says, a wise man will make more opportunities than he finds. So it's pretty easy to get in a rut, to put our blinders on, and not really pay attention to what's going on in the world around us. And there's a lot of people in need that we could potentially be helping. I think Jesus, in some respects, said something very parallel to Sir Francis Bacon when he said, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So what your treasure is used for betrays what is in your heart. So I would encourage all of us to examine ourselves and ask ourselves, could I have heart trouble? In 1 John chapter 3, in verse 17, John says, but whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? In Romans 12, in verse 13, very simple. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. James 4 and verse 17. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. So where our heart, where our treasure is, that betrays our heart. So why do a lot of needs not go satisfied that people have? Could it be that we're stingy? I don't necessarily think that's true, because when there's a need sometimes, and I've asked Christians to contribute, we're pretty generous-hearted people in most of the time. Could it be apathy? Just not caring? I hope that's not the case. Inattentiveness? I think that is a real danger, that we get so busy with our everyday lives that we're not maybe paying as close as attention to what we should be paying. And then fear of getting involved. I certainly have found that to be the case with some brethren, that, you know, I know there's something there that needs attention, but, you know, I don't want to get in that mess. I don't want to be involved in that. What we need to realize is that we cannot delegate any of our individual responsibilities to other people. Just because we've put money in the collection plate on Sunday doesn't mean that we've met all of our obligations, because we have a lot of obligations that are directed toward us as individuals. And I think sometimes we're guilty of thinking that we'll just let the church take care of that. And that's not the case. In Matthew chapter 25, let's read that section. In this section, Jesus is giving us a picture of the judgment, when all the people are going to be gathered before his throne. And it's real interesting to examine the criteria in this section upon which judgment will be made. Beginning in verse 31, Jesus says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he will set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Then he will also say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison, and did not minister to you? Then he will answer them, "Surely I say to you, inasmuch as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me." And these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. He is addressing our individual responsibilities here. This is not something that we can satisfy by putting money into the plate on Sunday. This is something that we take care of as individual Christians. As Paul said in Galatians 6, when you examine the context of that, when you follow the pronouns, it's individual responsibility. And the same is true with James chapter 1. He's talking about what we're to do as individuals. So what's the solution? Well, the solution's real simple. We need to realize that the commands of passages like Galatians 6 and James 1 are no less important than "he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." No less important. It's no less important than Acts 2:38, when Peter told them to repent and be baptized, all of you. Acts 17 and verse 30, when Paul preached in Athens, God commands all men everywhere to repent. Well, the same is true of Galatians 6 and James 1 for Christians. Those apply to each and every one of us. And you can just go on down the line. Romans 12, we're to present our bodies a living sacrifice. That's an individual responsibility each Christian has. Each Christian has the responsibility to examine themselves when they partake of the Lord's Supper. And each of us have the responsibility to discharge Galatians 6 and James 1 in our life. So if we truly believe in Bible authority like we preach, if we believe, as Peter said, "If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God," or "whatsoever we do in word or deed, let us do all in the name of the Lord Jesus," then the right to pick and choose the passages that we're going to obey and not obey. We rightly criticize our denominational friends for practicing what I call cafeteria-style religion, where they just pick and choose the things that they like. That's what I do when I go to the cafeteria. I skip the green beans and I get the apple pie. So we can't do that spiritually speaking when it comes to the Bible. We need to realize, as we just read from Matthew 25, that taking care of these individual responsibilities is going to be one of the basis for our judgment. We're going to be judged on that, according to what Jesus said. Also, taking care of these individual responsibilities is one very way that we let our light shine. And when we let our light shine, what do? We imitate our Heavenly Father. It's also, amazingly, when you read in Ephesians 4 and verse 28, one reason that we work. Notice what Paul says. He says, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good." Why, Paul? Why should we be working with our hands? "That he may have something to give him who has need." So that's one of the reasons why we work. And then lastly here, and we could think of a lot more reasons than this, by taking care of our responsibilities in this area, we'll find both temporal and eternal blessings. In Acts 20 and verse 35, Paul was preaching and he quoted something that Jesus said, remember what he said? He said, I'm having a senior moment here. Acts 20 and verse 35. Oh, it's more blessed to give than to receive, if I remember. And I'm going to show you some slides here, and I'm going to bring that up on one of these slides, where this was really driven home to me a couple of years ago. And then we need to remember from Galatians 6 that God is not going to be mocked in how we use our financial resources. Remember, the immediate context of that passage is, that's what it's talking about. We often make a much broader application of that passage, and rightly so. But when you really study the specific context, he's talking about how we treat others who have been our teachers, that we need to share with them. And we need to share not only with them, but with others in need, especially those of the household of faith. Well, I wanted to show you a series of slides here to kind of drive this point home. This is my son on the left, and his name is Ryan. On the right is a young preacher in the Philippines named Robinson Pulveras. And Sherry and I have been helping support Robinson since 2003. And when I went to the Philippines, I went to Robinson's congregation and had the opportunity to preach. And I hope this doesn't come across as patting myself on the back, but a couple of years before I went over there and preached, there was a big typhoon that went through the area where Robinson lives, and it wiped out the people's crops, and they were literally starving to death. And Sherry and I sent a couple of $100 over there, and they bought rice and shared it with the congregation. And actually, when I went there to preach, I had forgotten all about it. It was no big deal to us. I mean, it wasn't a large sum of money, but those people remembered that. And when I arrived there, they had this like flower necklace made for me, and they had a chalkboard up there, and they had written in real fancy writing, "Welcome, Craig Thomas," and it really reminded me of Acts 20 and verse 35, that it is more blessed to give than to receive. Another picture here. This is my son's father-in-law. This is Rody Gumpad, who's a Filipino preacher, and I call him the world's hardest working gospel preacher, and I truly believe that. If you notice his shirt here, he's soaking wet. He's preaching so hard. Plus, Philippines is a very hot place. But when I went over there, I got a real education. You know, when we have a gospel meeting here in the States, it's actually a pretty sedentary affair compared to what they do over there. You know, we have a preacher come in for a few days, and we have a service in the evening, and then we all go home and we wait till the next evening, and we come back for another service. When these people have gospel meetings, he'll load up his van with, you know, his wife and several other young preachers, and there'll be two or three other cars full of preachers following him, and they'll start out at 5:30 in the morning and drive till 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and they'll stop at a congregation, and there'll be people there waiting, and they're already singing, and he'll preach a lesson or two, and another preacher will probably preach a lesson, and when I was there, I would preach a lesson, and then a Filipino would get up and translate my lesson into the native language, and then we would stop and go to the preacher's house or one of the members' house and eat a lunch. We'd all pile back in the car, and we're off to the next place. Then in the afternoon, we get to the next place, and we repeat what we did in the morning. And then we pile in the car, go to another place, and do the same thing at night. And then at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, we get back at Rody's house, and at 5:30 in the morning, up, and you do it again. And as long as this man has financial support, he's doing that nearly every day. And I appreciate him so much, because there's no way in the world I could keep that kind of a schedule physically, because it's very demanding. Plus, as you can tell from the sweat here, when I was over there every day, it's 105 degrees. So it's brutal conditions, and those people will sit all day and listen if there's somebody that's willing to get up and preach. This is his wife, Tessie. I had to show her because she is such a wonderful helper. And in many places that we would go, when Rody or one of us was preaching, she's off in another part of the, outside under a shade tree or something with the children, teaching a class to the children. This is another picture, my son here. Like I told you, there'll be two or three cars full of people following Rhody, and these are all gospel preachers, and you know, they're kind of under his tutelage, and you know, they're going along and learning. This gentleman, I really appreciated him. His name is Edgar. This is one of the venues that we preached at. They just had a chalkboard tacked up on this light pole and a little table here for us, and we're preaching under the shade of this tree. But there are dozens of men like Edgar, hard-working gospel preachers that desperately need some financial support. The more financial support they get, it's not that they live an elevated lifestyle, but they're able to go out and preach because they need money for gasoline for their motor scooter and things like that so that they can go out. And I really appreciated Edgar because for about a 4 or 5 day stretch, he was my personal interpreter. So he interpreted all of my lessons and he was really good at it. Plus one night we stayed at one of the, at the place that we preached, we stayed at the preacher's house, and the houses in the Philippines are made out of concrete. And there was only one bed, so somebody was going to have to sleep on the concrete. So thank goodness Edgar volunteered to sleep on the concrete, and I got to sleep in the bed that night, so I really appreciated that. This is Edgar also. Here he's baptized these half a youngsters. Oftentimes the preaching in the Philippines is criticized. They say, well, you know, they're saving up these baptisms to impress American preachers. Well, there was no American preacher here on this trip. And another criticism they often get is, well, they're baptizing young children. Well, you have to be very careful in judging the age of a Filipino versus the age of an American child, because some of these youngsters here might look like they're only 10 years old, but a 10-year-old over there, what looks like a 10-year-old, may be 16 because of the difference in them physically. And I know from personal experience that the preachers over there, when someone really young comes forward, you know, they do the same thing that we would do here. You know, they really talk to that young person to make sure that they are ready to be baptized. And if they're not ready, they're not afraid to turn them away, you know, and have them wait. Then there's other needs. This gentleman's name is Ben Vistro, and this is his son, King. King was born with a congenital heart defect. And if you're going to get medical treatment in the Philippines, you have to have the cash in hand when you go to the hospital or the doctor. They don't have health insurance. Fortunately, things are not quite as expensive over there as they are here. So he needed $8,500 to have open heart surgery, which to them might as well have been, you know, $850,000 to us, because there's no way in the world they were ever going to be able to get that kind of money on their own. But through some help, I was really encouraged, because I kind of took this on as a project of mine, and I was determined that somehow we were going to raise that money. And then when I took it on, I'm like, what in the world have I gotten myself into? You know, how am I going to raise $8,500? And I just sent out an appeal to some brethren I know, and they sent it to brethren they know, and within the space of about 2 or 3 months, it was amazing. The money was raised, and we were able to make this happen. This is another case that's important to me, since our daughter was born with a cleft palate, but without help from Americans, this young child would have never been able to have this repaired. But for $1,200, she was able to have the initial surgery and have that repaired. So there are plenty of opportunities out there. You can see me in the background. I'm actually, this is one of the places that I preach, but this is another need that they have for church buildings. Personally, I don't donate to church buildings. I limit mine to the cleft palates and the actual preaching of the gospel, but they do have a need here for things like that. I mean, here this is out in the open, which is fine and well for a temporary thing, but guarantee you the first typhoon that comes through, that place is gone. So, you know, they need a more permanent structure to meet in. This was at that same place on the previous slide. This really tore at my heart. This young man was so sick that he had to have his friends carry him there, but he was so determined that he was going to hear the preaching that day. So certainly a worthy thing to be giving to. This is not untypical of the kind of places that these people live in. And in fact, I'm going to show you in a minute, this will look like quite a modern house compared to some of the things that they lived in. This is another young preacher. His name is Dennis Yusan, and he's another preacher that could use support, very energetic young man. And these people risk their lives. This Dennis is showing a picture of this river. So, you know, they're going to get in a small boat or a raft and ford that river so that they can go over there and preach. So, just like Epaphroditus this morning, you know, that risked his life, you know, these people are risking their lives for the sake of the gospel. This was another place that we preached. You can see that's just a very basic shelter with the they're called nipple leaves on the roof, and these benches that they're sitting on are coconut logs sawn in two. They're about that wide, so you can imagine sitting there for 4 or 5 hours listening to preaching. It's pretty uncomfortable. It's not near as comfortable as seats, I guarantee you that. But this place was overflowing, and many of the people that came to hear us at this venue were called Negritos. They described them to me as the Filipino version of Aborigines. So they're the indigenous people to the Philippines. And unfortunately, they're very poor, but they walked, many of them, 3 and 4 miles to come to hear us preach. And again, it's 110 degrees. And some of these folks don't even have shoes. They're walking barefooted to come and hear the gospel preached. And this lady really touched my heart. She carried these two babies 4 miles to come and hear us preach. And for years I had read this passage, 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, that they may lay hold of eternal life. Well, for a number of years, I thought that applied to somebody else, not to me. But in relationship to this lady, I'm the person of 1 Timothy 6. And most of us here would fall into that category as well. Now, this is the kind of place that lady lives in. Can you imagine that's the place that you're going to walk 4 miles to go home to? Basically, they work on these rice farms as day laborers, working out in that sun all day, either planting rice or harvesting rice, threshing rice. This shows it a little better. This one's a little more upscale house. It's a two-story house. But that's not much shelter, you know, considering the kind of weather that they have over there, the type of climate. This was a gospel meeting. This is my son's father-in-law again, Rhody Gumpad. This is at a Negritos congregation. This was just recently, a couple of months ago. They went and preached. And even though Rhody has a four-wheel drive vehicle and so forth, it's really tough to get back into these places. I mean, you talk about being in the boondocks. These are really in the boondocks. And again, he's preaching his heart out. And that day, they baptized 27 people in one day at gospel meeting. So are there any opportunities? Yes, there's opportunities to with a relatively to us small amount of money to do a lot of good if we're willing to do that. And this is just a picture of some of the people that were baptized. And you can see Dennis Use on here. He was there helping Rhody that day. And on their way back, they had a flat tire. So, you know, they need support because things like that cost money, as well as the gasoline that, you know, it took to get them there that day and took to get them back home. And just how hardworking he is. And in this trip, he actually was traveling to another island. So he's waiting here to get on one of these ferry boats. And, you know, he's going to spend like 12 or 13 hours on a ferry boat to get to another place to preach. So it's hard work, very hard work. This is one of his sons-in-law, Mark, and one of his sons, Rhody Jr. I think Metro Manila is a population of over 15 million people, and there's not very many congregations in the city of Manila, so they decided that they were going to help start a new work down there. So every weekend, Rhody or one of his sons or sons-in-law or, you know, a group of them go down and hold services at this new congregation. So they'll, you know, 2 days before, you know, like on a Friday, they'll jump on a bus, a 12-hour bus trip down to Manila. They go to the church building, sleep on the floor so that they can be there on the Lord's Day, the next day, to hold services. So pretty dedicated folks. But, you know, that costs money for the bus trip. That costs money for them to eat while they're down there, and it costs money to rent that room. But now there's a congregation of about 50 meeting there, and it's growing. And if you were to decide to support something like this, I would always insist on regular reports. And this just happens to be a report that this young fellow Mark puts together every week or so. And he has a blog, you know, and he'll send you an email with a link to this, so you can go in here and read what he's done every day insofar as preaching the gospel is concerned. And, you know, I think it's extremely important if you ever get involved with something like this, to demand that they report, and they're willing to do that. Also, whenever I have given money or they're buying food because there's been a disaster, they're always real good to report how they use those funds. You know, they want to make sure that you know that, you know, you're not money over there into a black hole and it's going into somebody's pocket. They're actually using the funds in the right way. Then there's other places. I have a few contacts over in India. This is Brother Ambedkar in Andhra Pradesh over in India. The gospel is making a lot of inroads in India, so there's opportunities there. This is Ed Smith, who I was talking to Joel this morning, and he knows Ed quite well. Ed has done a lot of preaching over in South Africa, so there's opportunities there also. Now this young man, John Gentry, and his wife Stacy, I've never met them, but I have corresponded a lot with them. They're over in Moldova. preaching the gospel. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. And I really like this picture they sent me. How do you reach 147 million orphans? Just like my sermon said, one at a time. It's as simple as that. This young man is a Filipino. His name's ironically Willie Pastor, just like pastor in the Bible. But Willie has a real interesting story. When I went over to the Philippines in 2010, I met Willie's wife and children. This is at a provincial prison, and Willie was in prison. When he was a younger man, there was a person that came in their house and had a machete and was trying to kill some of his relatives, and he killed this person in self-defense. And the initial investigation, the police cleared him of it. There were no charges filed. Several years passed by, and the family of the person that he killed, they were rich people. As I told Mike and Julie, a new pharaoh come into power, if you will, in the province. They paid the new people in charge and had Willie arrested and put in prison, even though he had initially been cleared. So when we went to the provincial prison that day, he had already converted about 25 fellow prisoners. And I didn't get to preach that day, but a couple of the other fellows did, and there were three people baptized that day. Then eventually, Willie got transferred down to the main prison in Manila that houses something like 10 or 15,000 prisoners. And now there are three groups meeting in that prison, and there's been over 400 prisoners baptized. And so he's a regular modern-day Joseph, and certainly him and his family are worthy of some support. This is another preacher that Sherry and I help support. His name is Jonathan Carino. He preaches more in the central part of the Philippines. And he did something recently that is not uncommon. It doesn't happen all the time, but I've certainly heard of several instances. They were holding some gospel meetings, and they were having denominational preachers come to these gospel meetings. Unlike here in the U.S., where you would never, hardly ever, I've never seen that happen, where you would have denominational people coming to a real gospel meeting. Over there, they don't have the hang-ups that we have here. So it's not uncommon for that to happen. And just recently, him and some other preachers were able to convert five denominational preachers. And then now they're helping those denominational preachers going back to their own congregations and converting the congregation. And that takes a tremendous amount of courage for these denominational people to do that, because, I mean, it's physically dangerous for them to do that. I mean, they've been, you know, physically assaulted, they have been threatened, and their financial support is gone. And a lot of these denominations, you know, they're much better at supporting things, unfortunately, than we are. And so by, you know, obeying the truth, you know, they're really losing something in the physical realm. So as we bring this lesson to a close, we need to be more than just sympathetic with the needs of other people. As one person said, emotion is no substitute for action, and the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We've got to literally put our money where our mouth is. So I would challenge all of us today. What are we doing with our opportunities? Because we need to remember, as we've already pointed out from Matthew 25, that one of the criteria of judgment is going to be how we have discharged our individual responsibilities when it comes to benevolence, not only to our brethren, but even to those who are of the world. So that's my lesson for this evening. I hope it will cause you to think. There are, again, as I pointed out, there's a lot of opportunities, and the thing about it doesn't take a huge amount of money to do a tremendous amount of good. So I encourage you to think about that and to think about your responsibilities, and I'll think about mine. So if there's anyone here tonight that isn't a Christian, or who is a Christian and has fallen away and needs restoration, we would encourage you to come, and we'd be glad to assist you in obeying God this evening. Let us stand and sing the song of encouragement.
Stand.